Welcome to a special edition of Innovations in Education, eSchool Media's podcast on the latest and greatest in both K-12 and higher ed tech. I'm Kevin Hogan, content director for both eSchool News and eCampus News, and I'm glad you found us. Now, drop the company name Instructure on the average educator, and you more than likely will get a blank stare in return. Now mention Instructure's flagship product, Canvas, and you will get a flash of instant recognition. Founded in 2008, Instructure reports having more than 6,000 customer organizations with more than 35 million users around the world in both K-12 and higher ed. I had the opportunity to attend InstructureCon 23, the company's first user conference since the pandemic, and meet many educators, partner companies, as well as Instructure's senior leadership. That includes Chief Product Officer Shirin Vijayasingham, Ryan Lufkin, Vice President of Global Strategy, and CEO Steve Daly. We hit on a number of topics that will affect the way educators and students teach and learn, including post-pandemic behaviors, student security, the pursuit of equitability in education, the future of hybrid learning, and of course, AI, and yes, a little more AI. It was the first Innovations podcast recorded in person, but certainly won't be the last. First up, Shirin, on the rise of collaboration tools and other innovations that have come about in the wake of COVID-19. Have a listen. First Instructure conversation. Very excited to be here. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me today.
Absolutely. It's been my pleasure.
Let's jump right into the weeds. Let's get this started in terms of Instructure and sort of the work you're doing and the state of play that you see the company in now and where you might see it going as we enter our, hopefully, our endemic or out of the pandemic.
That's right. Yeah, I love that. So I think, you know, really important for us to start with is how we have approached what we're doing here at Instructure. And so one of the things that's always grounded us is the fact that we've done this in partnership with our institutional customers, right? We've worked closely with them to co-create, to innovate. And that's always been true in the ethos of the products that we've built. And so you see that as we think about sort of the journey we've had and the journey we're taking next, that's embedded all the way through, right? We build our products in partnership with our customers. We give them an opportunity to beta those experiences and bring them to life so that when you see them, right, you're going to see some reveals in a couple of days at our big conference here. You'll know that those are things that we've done in partnership with our customers. And then that's been something that's really important to us because focusing on our institutions, focusing on our educators and our learners has helped us build the great products that we've built today.
So, you know, and I have to say, you know, not necessarily being a cheerleader of the industry, but someone who's like enthused about the technology itself and looking at Instructure and looking at the years, what I call BP, before the pandemic.
Yeah.
Your work and the work of the company and your partners basically saved whatever we want to call what education was the past 3 years. I've had conversations where people said, you know, if COVID had happened 10 years before, we wouldn't have had the bandwidth and we wouldn't have had the tools.
Yeah.
Now, writing about ed tech between 2010 and 2020, a lot of my conversations were around teacher resistance to not only using technology, but to data, to using video. Video was one thing, especially when it came to like professional development. They're like, forget it. You're not turning those cameras on. COVID arrives. Now everybody's on a camera. I mean, there's been some major developments, if not necessarily the technology, but user behavior. Can you talk a little bit about your experience and watching what was, I guess, the greatest beta test in ed tech history?
Absolutely. I mean, I certainly think the last 5 years has seen seismic shifts in education. We've had the benefit of even, you know, sort of the BP pre-pandemic time, right? We've had the benefit of building our products with educators first. And so one of the things that we've really enjoyed is great distribution and great adoption with the institutions and the educators we've worked with. And the reason we haven't seen so much of the resistance that you might describe is because, you know, when you're building something with educators for them, you tend to get a lot of love and support in the products that you've built. And I think that that gave us really good ground upon which to build, right, as we entered, you know, those dark years of the 2000s, early 2020s in the pandemic, because we had established ourselves as a product that was being built for educators to be used, And it was easy to use, and it put learning first, right? And so adopting these tools certainly became a lot easier. Now, obviously, there is a plethora of tools out there. In fact, we just published our EdTech Top 40 report, and it shows that in the average school district on a school year, there are more than 2,500 tools being used, right? And so part of what we've done as an organization is work really closely with our partners to make sure that the implementation, the use of these tools is first and foremost centered on the learning and is easy. It's implemented deeply within our platform, the Instructure Learning Platform, and it makes it really easy. So even for those for whom technology may have not been their comfort zone,
yeah,
I think being able to be forced into it by circumstances made it a little bit easier when the tools that they were using were intuitive and organically easy to use. And I think it's certainly sparked, you know, that usage has sparked a shift in how education is being delivered today. Multiple modalities is the norm. I think because there are so many tools, I think understanding what is working and looking at the data becomes really important, right?
Yeah.
And I
yeah.
think there's also a little bit of sort of a need, right, to sort of understand of this plethora of tools, how do we manage the sprawl of tools and how do we think about figuring out which ones are best tuned to which learner at which point in time? And I think we've played an important role in working with our partners to get to that place.
One of the things that I've noticed while we watched this beta test occur was for the first time, parents becoming more involved in the dynamic of the learning process. Now, having written about EdTech for 15 years, it was the student, the faculty member, maybe an administrator involved, less than a handful of times where it was talking about the parent. Again, we get into the pandemic, every parent's now a teaching assistant and who was in there. Has that changed any of the dynamics for your work?
Yeah, it's a great question. We've always talked about if you focus on the learner first, you'll understand all of the stakeholders and all of the participants in helping that learner be successful. And parents are one stakeholder group like many others. We've always had a parent app with our product because we believe parents play a vital role. Caregivers really play a vital role in the learner. And one of the things that we've worked with our institutions is to help them understand how these tools are being used in ways that help them communicate effectively to their stakeholders. It's about getting the best for the learner and making sure we're doing so in a way that's equitable for every learner and making sure that we're doing it to help each learner find their journey no matter where they are in that learning journey. And some learners may need a little extra support and some learners may not be native speakers of the language and so they need a little bit of supports here. And so having a suite of tools that helps each of these learners and being able to help our institutions tell their stakeholders, whether the stakeholder groups can be administrative organizations, right, like a governance board or a board of regents, or a parent group, a stakeholder group like that, or the general public. I think being able to arm them with the information that they have to make effective decisions and to be able to communicate those decisions has really helped them navigate what has been some shift in the dynamics of what the stakeholders play in the success of a learner. But everyone is pointed at the same goal, which is helping that learner be successful, and that's a noble place to be.
Sure. Any other innovations that came out of the past couple of years? I mean, in terms of like, wow, we should have been doing it this way all along, or any ways that you've seen schools or districts at the K-12 or at the higher ed level start to begin to use your platform in a way that you may not have intended originally?
Yeah, so we've seen, you know, a lot of our collaboration tools, right, really be used heavily because the pandemic created the conditions for which you needed to think about how to collaborate. And as a result of that, some of our institutions have found a lot of success with really scaling collaboration at a global level. We've talked to some of our institutions, we've got students dialed in from many parts of the world and collaborating asynchronously on projects using some of our tools that we have to enable the creation of authentic student work. And so it's been great to see this expansion of worldviews, right, be introduced into the learning because it's helping every learner be more successful, have a broader worldview.